G'day everybody, my name's Glenn Hill.
And I'm Jacob Meyer.
Welcome to another Tactical Tennis Podcast. We're talking about Wimbledon, of course, because Wimbledon's just hit the end of the first week.
Yeah, well, I guess it's basically middle Sunday, so no matches in the immediate future, but...
We're recording on Saturday, but this will be either out late tonight, so people will be listening to it on middle Sunday, I'd imagine.
It's about middle Sunday for me.
Well, fair enough. Okay. It's getting close.
So look, before we get anywhere, I made a prediction last time that Dustin Brown was going to be Andy Murray.
Yeah, I
was wrong. to be fair, okay, not to be fair, but basically to chicken out on that after the fact, I did make a comment that if it wasn't going to be as predicted, it would be on the strength of Murray's serve and Dustin's inability to actually hold serve, which proved very, very true. And Dustin very much struggled to hold serve.
That was very much the opposite of an upset. That was a
no
pasting.
No chance for the upset.
That was a pasting.
Pretty routine.
Yeah, about as routine as it gets at a Grand Slam tennis past the first round.
No,
horrible
that's
mismatch.
That's not fair at all, because Rafa is demolishing people.
Well, I wouldn't say his demolishing days are done for the tournament. I mean, come on, I think that his Murray's 3-2 and 2 beatdown on Brown was stronger than Rafa's last win, but 1-4 and 6. But anyways, let's not get too far off. Really quickly, just wanted to touch on the news we discussed, Tomic last time, and kind of his press conference. And obviously, for people who haven't heard, Head promptly dropped him as a sponsor, or ceased to sponsor him. He wasn't sponsoring them, in case that wasn't obvious. They ceased to sponsor him following that press conference, and his behavior and, I guess, attitude there within. And I think really that's kind of, in a sense, the solution to me. I mean, if somebody's going to, like I said last time, I mean, tennis is entertainment, however you might want to look at it. And if you're not going to be entertaining and you're not going to give people an effort for which they're paying good money, then, you know, the solution to that is to just take away his opportunity to fail to entertain people. So we'll see what happens. I mean, I think between the fines and the sponsor dropping, maybe he'll go and take a break for a while or do something else, or take a break for good. You know, at this point, I'm not too fussed about what that is, but I do know.
He's definitely not going to take a break for good. And I didn't know that we were bringing this up, but you know that I approach this from a different perspective. I mean, Head did what they did, and I guess they do what they do.
I think they were right to.
But Bernie's still a young guy, and I mean, the truth is, I don't think that Head has put any resources into doing anything, either with him or for him, besides writing a check. And you know, the truth is, Bernie probably had a pretty significant contract, and that contract was probably really not for being a top 20 player, but probably really based more on his potential to be a marquee big four top 10 kind of player kind of guy. And I think when you combine his results, which have been waning, with his behavior, they saw it as a nice opportunity to get out and save some money. And to make it more than that, I think it's just inappropriate. I mean, inaccurate. I mean, they're not like, I don't really think that there's anyone there that is saying, oh, like, we're doing this in the best interest of Bernard Tomic.
Well, of course not. I mean, but that's not their job. I mean, they make rackets and they're supposed to hopefully be a big player in the tennis industry, and sending money to a player who acts in a way that's damaging to the sport as a whole and professional tennis as a whole would be foolish on their part. They're not there to, I mean, look, Bernard Tomic is 24 years old. You know, I mean, he's starting to run out of the room for the whole "he's a young guy" excuse.
Not an excuse. I'm saying that contracts are given out in the professional tennis world based on being young and having potential. That's when you get big contracts. Okay. And the idea is that, you know, if you're a young guy and you can convince someone that you have the potential to be, you know, the next great player. Australia is a big market. You're the Australian one here. I mean,
no, I get all that. I'm just saying, like, I mean, you just make it sound like heads dropped the ball somehow and not taking better care of Tom. Sound like you think that they should have done something to help him on an emotional, psychological way through obviously all the struggles that he has.
No, that's not. I'm not implying that, and I didn't imply that. You said something to the effect of that this was the right thing to do, and then linked it to essentially modifying Bernie's behavior. So the idea that this is, you know, going to be motivation for him.
No, I actually said I think hopefully he'll take time away from the sport, or maybe just never come back to it. I don't think that Head's doing it to try to change Bernie's behavior. I think they're doing it because he's toxic and toxic to their brand and toxic to professional tennis at the way that he's acting right now. And they don't want to be associated with him. And I don't blame them one little bit. I just am conjecturing on the fact that I hope Bernie either stops playing for a while or stops playing for good, because him coming out and acting like that is bad for the sport.
Well, I hope that people do a better job of actually helping Bernie out. He can't do it on his own. None of the top guys do it on their own.
Sure.
And he needs to work a lot harder. And one of the things that I think is lost on him is that the better these guys get, the harder they actually have to work.
Right. But I mean, my point is he's still making, you know, probably somewhere close to $1 million a year with his half-ass effort right now. That's not going to continue indefinitely, but hopefully with the loss of the sponsorship, that he will take that as an opportunity, or, you know, it'll cause some sort of a reaction on his part to seriously examine the way that he's doing things. Yeah, I mean, I certainly hope that. But here's the thing to me is, like, look, if he's going to get help and he's going to change the way he's doing it, I don't think that he's got the structure in place to do that while being a professional tennis player who's actively touring on the tour.
Well, okay, so that's a really good point. And before we go too far down, I mean, I guess I don't, that's not right, but I don't want to go too far down the rabbit hole on this. I didn't know that, you know, this would be such a big topic, but it kind of is. First of all, he doesn't work that hard, okay? And that's just the truth of the matter.
Sure.
Everyone knows it. And one of the things that's interesting about him is that he's basically said, you know what, enough with the hypocrisy. The truth is I don't work that hard, and, you know, I struggle with my motivation. And
right, he's not pretending anymore.
He's not pretending, which to a certain degree, I mean, if you think about it, not from I want to idolize these guys, but if you think about it, like if Bernie was your neighbor and he was just the kid next door, because, I mean, he's 24 years old, like a few years ago, he was just the kid next door. And if you think about it from that perspective, this is like a psychological, the cliche phrase would be cry for help. He doesn't have the structure in place, but he doesn't have the structure in place either where he has a routine and a work ethic and a commitment to the game from the time perspective that would prevent him from actually getting help and really doing a lot better. I mean, he's not going to stop playing. Because
no, it's not about
playing,
that. It's more about the fact that, I mean, like, look at the support structure he has around him and his father and the relationship he has with his father and the way his father seems to treat everybody around Bernard when it comes to tennis and probably other things too. I mean, I just can't see a way in which he's going to get that work done. But
yeah,
we could talk
really
about
– there's a really bad reputation there. I'm just saying that he's going to have to work really hard. I mean, one of the things that I do think is going to happen is he's going to shut his mouth. I mean, he's going to stop talking because it just cost him a lot of money, and money is important to him, and he does need it. And he understands that he doesn't have another job. He really doesn't have anything else that he can do. And he's not going to be at the top of the list for people to hire him as a coach.
Yeah. No, so, I mean, one of the things that I think was really comical to me was he's talked disdainfully about people who go out and make $50 an hour working a regular job. But the irony of it to me is that if he's not a professional tennis player, he's not qualified to do any job where somebody would pay him $50 an hour, except maybe as a tennis coach.
And I don't know actually what you're referring to.
I'm saying he's made comments. Like, he's been disdainful about people who work regular jobs before and made comments about people who only make $50 an hour. And
right. I'm just saying that I don't know the context of that, so I can't really comment to them. What I do know is that the money does talk for some degree to him, so it's going to affect his behavior. Unfortunately, I question whether or not it's going to affect it in a way that's really beneficial to the rest of us, because I think it's good for these guys to be honest about this kind of stuff. If they're struggling...
Yeah, I just don't think it's good for the game for him to be standing in press conferences and talking about things like that.
While
being an active professional, so...
What I think is bad for the game was having a guy that was top 20 in the world that didn't have to work very hard, that went out there and was living off of the work that he had done basically 10 years earlier, and it was still carrying him through. And those of us that I think understand this level of tennis have been watching it for a while and counting the days, realizing, hey, people are going to catch up and they are going to pass you. And you're not going to be able to live off of those times from when you worked really hard when you were 15 years old or whatever it was forever. But now, I mean, he's going to keep playing tennis. So if he's going to be involved in tennis, he's going to have some kind of a voice, because he is a character, at the very least, in public media in Australia. I mean, I want him to be a guy that works harder and gets better.
Right. I mean, I think we all want that. I just think that's probably very unlikely to happen. But we don't want to sit here and talk about Bernard Tomic for the entire time when there's tons of exciting tennis taking place. So let's talk about Wimbledon men's fourth round and some of the matchups that we have, and a little bit about what we both each think that we can expect. Might as well start from the top of the draw, where the first match, the men's fourth
round.
Andy Murray's still alive. Got through Fognini at four.
Okay, now he's which wasn't surprising at all, but now he's got Benoit Paire, which I got to tell you, I'm a little surprised by that.
That Paire's made it this far?
Yeah.
Yeah, I am too, mostly just from the emotional side of things, because that dude has wrecked some rackets lately and got himself in a lot of trouble with some really weird and just downright bizarre behavior. Having complete tantrums on the court.
He's another guy who's a really nice guy off the court and is a bit of a conundrum on the court.
Conundrum? Is that the word we're using for it now?
That's the word I'm using for it, because when we go back to somebody like Bernie, he's put himself out there so much that we have a pretty good idea of sort of how he takes with Benoit. I've got no idea.
He seems
super nice. He's friendly. All the guys on the tour like him, but on the court, nobody likes to play him.
Right.
And part of that is because his drop shots are so good. And part of that is because you don't know when a racket is going to end up, 12 inches into the grass.
Right. So, yeah. Because, I mean, he has literally thrown tantrums multiple times in the last month, to the point where he's had points. I think even a full game default at one point. It's just been really bizarre. And over relatively small things. And one of the things I think has really stood out to me about the way that Pear's been acting lately is that he hasn't had the ability to regulate himself to that point where most people get frustrated about something, maybe blow off a tiny bit of steam and let it go and then move on. And he just has been working himself up more and more and more and getting to the point where he's on the brink of getting to falter before he pulls himself back. I think it's been pretty surprising to see him come through the way that he has. Good overall. I mean, look, he's obviously a nice player. He's got some good game. I think that I think a lot of it's just the draw too. I mean, he plays Dutra Silva in the first round. Then he's got Herbert in the second, and then Janowicz, who's not exactly the most stable character himself, in the third.
Yeah, you got to think that Janowicz is probably going to get through that on grass, especially given the fact that Janowicz actually had some momentum and was winning matches. I mean, if it's a first round,
yeah,
Benoit's
I get
been
you.
A top 20 guy.
Yeah, I feel like Benoit's kind of a really bad matchup for Janowicz, though. And that to me is why it wasn't very shocking, because he's a little more steady. Janowicz obviously doesn't really do a good job of following patterns for the most part. Pear, like you said, has excellent drop shots. He moves well for his height. I just didn't really feel... like that was a good matchup for Genowitz in that case. But if we talk about Murray playing pair, you know, what do you think is going to happen?
Well, so this is interesting for me. I mean, pair has trouble with the forehand. His backhand's very solid. He's got a huge serve that can go on and off. He's a little bit, he is actually reminiscent to me of Dustin Brown. I mean, he's got the game to beat Murray, but you just don't back in between the ears.
Oh,
the thing
also,
that's really surprising is that he's put together three matches in a row. It's not that he could beat any one of those guys. I mean, he can beat anybody.
Right.
But so I don't know. I don't know what to think of it. Either he's about to implode or he's figured something out and we're looking at a new Benoit pair at least for a month.
I think that he's going down to Murray in either three or four sets. I think Murray's going to come through this thing. And the key part to me is just the serve. I mean, you talk about Pair having a big serve, but one part that's important is the fact that traditionally speaking, and he's doing a little better this tournament, certainly did a little better against Genowitz, traditionally speaking, for his height, his first serve percentage has been very low. He normally is typically serving in the low 50s for first serves.
Yeah, and he just goes for aces.
Right, but even that, I mean, come on, there's other guys out there that are serving aces at a higher rate than him that are his height that have a much better first serve percentage.
Sure, lots of guys just go for aces.
Yeah, I mean, his technique isn't super good. I actually wrote an article on Pair's serve a little while back and use him as an example of somebody not to copy on the serve's motion. And
definitely,
you know,
don't copy him.
Yeah, so I just don't think the serve's there. He might go out and have a freak serving day. I'm not saying it's impossible, but I think even if he has a great serving day, he'll nab a set off of Murray, but I just think at the end of the day, Murray's going to edge him out comfortably. There'll be, I think, 3 to 4 reasonably close sets, one break sets for the most part, maybe a breaker in there, but I just think Murray's good for this one.
Honestly, I feel like Murray's got a good chance of going 4 with Pair, and not because of anything that Pair does, just because Pair's got no choice basically but to attack Murray. And I think Murray, kind of the way he played against Fognini, is you can almost count on him just to not play quite aggressive enough. It's almost like he's not fully got his teeth into the tournament, but he doesn't have much time. I mean, he needs to get through this one in straight sets, I think, convincingly to really put himself in good position for the next round.
Yeah, well, I think the next round to him is danger because he's going to be playing the winner of Sam Querrey and Kevin Anderson, and big shout out to Sam. I mean, a 5-set win over Songa, who I thought was looking great earlier in the tournament.
Yeah, he was. I mean, I'm not sure if you were able to follow what happened to him today, but they suspended his match due to darkness yesterday and then put him back out on the court at 5-6 on an odd number game, which is very unusual for Wimbledon. Usually they would stop at 5-5 or 6-6, etc.
Right.
And so Songa went out there serving at 5-6 in the fifth set and promptly lost the first game and the match was over.
Yeah, which is an odd thing. But still, I mean, credit to Sam, you know, coming out of the gates like that. I mean, that could have gone either way. You know, Songa could have come out fresh and bombed a few serves and all of a sudden, you know, they're in a dogfight in that fifth set. But still, I mean, Querrey's come through a couple good wins now. He's looking strong and he's playing Kevin Anderson.
Yeah, Kevin seems to be playing good tennis again, which is nice for him. I don't think that Kevin's a good matchup for Murray unless he's absolutely rock solid and on fire. Querrey's not a bad matchup against Murray. He's the kind of guy that can really give Murray trouble.
Right.
But it's hard for me to see Sam in the semifinals.
Yeah, I'm with you on that front. Yeah, I think that's fair. So you think that Querrey's going to come through that match?
Well, I'm not sure, but no, I would probably say, I mean, I hadn't even thought about it until just now. I would probably say I think Anderson comes through that match, and then I think Murray comes through Anderson.
Yeah, see, so. I think Anderson does come through. I mean, look, he took down Verdasco in 4, which I think is a great win. Seppi, who's always dangerous, straight set Seppi.
Very tough on grass.
Yeah, Bamelman's in straight sets. He's looked really solid. He's looked really, really solid. You know, I think he's going to take Querrey. I think it's going to be either 4 or 5. I hesitate to pick the winner of the next match with Andy. I think some of it's going to depend on what exactly Andy does against Pair. But I think Andy's probably going to be in the semis at this point. And I say that kind of haltingly because I really didn't think he was going to be, but his draw's been relatively friendly. And I mean, I really think that in that regard, he's of the big four, he's got the easiest draw, and I think he's taking advantage of it the way that he should. And I think we're going to end up seeing Andy Murray in the quarterfinals. The next question is, or sorry, the semifinals, but who is he going to be facing there? So if we go to the next quarter, we've got Nadal Muller, which I think is going to be a great match. I'm calling it now. Yeah. They've played twice before at Wimbledon. Muller won their first matchup in four. And then 6 years later, Nadal beats him in three very tight sets, two of them involving tiebreakers. And now 6 years later, again, so these guys play every 6 years at Wimbledon. So I don't awesome. Know if we're going to see them again in 2023, but I do know they're playing. And I think this is going to be really, really close. A lot of people, I think, are expecting that Nadal's going to blow through Muller. But Muller has one of the, I think personally, has the most underrated and overlooked serve in men's tennis today.
Well, okay. So that depends on who you're referring to. In the media, yes. In the locker room, no.
I'm talking about everybody who's not playing professional men's tennis.
Right, because everyone that is playing professional men's tennis at these events does not want to play Gilles Muller, especially on the grass.
Yeah.
And shout out to him, by the way. He's one of the nicest guys on the tour. He has that reputation. Everybody likes him. And in the media, he's been treated as, I mean, I guess a journeyman. I don't know. A journeyman in the negative sense, right? Like,
right. Like he just doesn't really have it.
Well, like he was an outside top 100 guy. Like think back to when he beat Andy Roddick in the first round of the US Open after those American Express commercials. And it was like, oh my God, Andy Roddick loses in the first round. Gilles hit like 40 aces or something absurd in that match. And right. It was like, this guy's got one of the biggest serves in the world. And he outserved Andy Roddick in New York at the US Open. Wow, there's some real potential there. And what he's done is he's actually taken a little pace off of that serve, and he has distilled his game down to the core half dozen patterns, and he just executes the crap out of them.
Yes.
And it's very, very hard to play against. He's a lot like, and people might not like this analogy, but he sticks to his patterns a lot like Novak does, where he's just going to put a ball way out on one side and put another ball in the corner, and he's going to do it really, really fast. The difference is his ground strokes are nothing like Novak, and his movement isn't like that, but he comes forward to the net instead.
Right,
and his serve is
And I think in a way,
great.
Too, he has a little bit more of a penetrating game than Novak in some ways. You know, I think he plays a little flatter. He's a little more aggressive, really, overall. I think he's going to press forward. He's going to come at you a little more overtly. One of the big things I think that people don't think about is that I think Nadal's a great returner, but he's not a great offensive returner. What he's very, very good at is, relatively speaking, neutralizing the serve, kind of getting a return back that's good enough that within two or three shots, he's either ahead or at least neutral on the point. But he's not like Novak. He's not like Agassi was back in his day. And I think when he plays someone like Muller, who is such a great server and who is so underrated by casual and even probably some not so casual tennis viewers, he's going to find himself behind after the first two shots in a lot of rallies, in a way where I think he's going to struggle to get himself back into those points.
He's going to be
scrambling a lot, because I think Muller's going to come at him. He's going to hit a great first serve, attack a first ball hard and flat to a corner, and press up and make Nadal come up with the goods a lot in this match. I think Nadal has the goods, but he's going to make sure that Nadal has the goods. I think if Nadal has an off day, he could lose this match. I think regardless, Muller's going to take one set off him. I think Nadal's probably going to win it in four. But this is one of these things where I just wouldn't be, to me, it wouldn't be a huge upset if Muller comes through.
Well, look, Nadal's going to be behind on a lot of points in the first three shots here, okay? Muller's going to win most of those, and he has to. There are going to be points, though, when Nadal doesn't get behind, and he is going to trounce Muller the way he's hitting the ball right now.
Oh, absolutely.
He's going to be better than 50-50 on the points where Muller doesn't take control right away. And I think it's just going to be too much. There's going to be some service games against Gilles that you can't do anything about. Just a couple of days ago, he played a game where he just started out with an ace and then hit another one and then hit another one and then hit another one and looked over at his box like, yeah, well, I guess I just hit four aces for that game. And he can do that, and he can do that against anybody. But that's just one game. So that's why I have this one being close, as in probably single break sets, maybe some tie breaks. But I think Rafa's going to get through it in straights relatively, I'm going to say relatively comfortably, because I mean that as a sign of respect, basically.
Sure.
As comfortably,
yeah,
as
I mean, if you beat Muller like 6-4, 7-6, 7-5 on grass, that's a comfortable win in
that's
a sense for,
yeah.
for Muller, that's, because you're not gonna break him three times in a set. That's just not happening.
And if he beats him worse than that, then that's a huge statement. I mean,
well, it depends on what Muller brings that day, to be real. But
Mueller's been very steady. He's at high ranking. He's a 16 seed here.
Yeah, but look,
everybody
has an off day. I'm just saying, if Mueller comes out and has a bad serving day, he's toast. And so if Nadal comes out and wrecks him because he has a bad serving day, I'm not going to read too much into that. You know, I'm just going to say, hey, he had a bad serving day. But that'll be fairly easy to see from the statistics. You know, his first serve percentage will be down, his ace will be down. So, yeah, I think we both have Nadal coming through that. Who's he going to play? I got to say Cilic. We've got Cilic, Bautista Agut in the next one. And Cilic has been rock solid. He has cruised through the draw so far.
He has. And that's a tough one for me, because I still think of Cilic as a dangerous player as opposed to someone who, again, in contrast to Gilles pretty much brings the same stuff every day, and it's just getting better with time. Cilic does not bring the same stuff every day. There were days when he's arguably the number one player in the world when he won the US Open, I mean, he was just smacking everybody, right? But then there are days when he's absolutely not. So, I mean, I want to say Cilic is going to come through that, because I feel like he should. If he plays the way that he should play, he should win that relatively straightforwardly. I don't know. Something makes me hesitate about RBA. Bautista Agut, I mean, living up to his end of the bargain, getting this far on the grass, like he's actually doing a good job. So we could end up with a really good long 5-set match there, interestingly enough.
I don't think so. Look, I mean, I think Bautista Agut has had a great run, but I think this is where his shoelace comes undone, or he's got a blister. I mean, I think his run ends here to me. I mean, I think Cilic is going to take this in either 3 or 4. The thing that impressed me about the way Cilic has played so far this tournament is, you look at his results, he's had 3 impressive wins. He's got Kohlschreiber, straight sets. He gets Florian Mayer on the grass, straight sets. And then Steve Johnson on the grass, straight sets. I mean, those to me are 3 impressive wins. 3 dangerous guys.
Kohlschreiber and Johnson especially.
Yeah. Well, I think Florian Mayer on the grass is a challenging opponent. And I think the way that he handled that so comfortably, I mean, you know, yeah, sure, it was 7-6, 4, 7-5, and they're close sets, but Cilic is taking care of business. And that's a big deal to me. I think he's going to get through this match pretty comfortably. I think just too many weapons, and Bautista Agut, you know, great player. It's grass. It's not his natural surface. This is not his natural habitat. And Cilic is going to cruise through that one. And then if I look at what I expect to be the Nadal-Cilic matchup, I mean, I think Rafa's coming through that.
I mean, I honestly, the way Rafa's practicing, I mean, I'm watching him practice most days. He's clubbing the ball. He's practicing so well. He's making an impression on all the other players in the locker room.
Sure.
And that's not normal. Like, that doesn't happen at every slam, or certainly at every ATP. I mean, we all know what Rafa's capable of, or at least we've all seen him do some incredible things. His intensity level right now is super high. I mean, it's a little bit scary. He's starting to get an aura since the French, and with what he's doing right now on the grass, he's getting an aura that we really haven't seen in a couple of years in men's tennis, where it's like, oh my gosh, can anybody beat this person?
Well, you mean like a year and a half when we had
Novak
Djokovic having that.
But Novak, you know, Novak kind of started to lose an aura. It took probably a year before he actually started losing, but he, you know, it was gone there, right? I mean, you go back into the middle of Novak's run where he was untouchable for a bit, and in the locker room, people were just like, well, I mean, it's just automatic that if you played Novak, you were going to lose. And Rafa had that for a couple of years, and Federer had that for longer than anybody. I think he had that for a full three and a half years where everyone just felt like, well, if you beat Federer, it's just because he wanted to go to lunch in the middle of the match or something, and you got lucky. But anyway, that's besides the point. So I've got Nadal coming through that as well. It's going to be a really interesting one. It should be super high quality tennis, but Cilic has the weapons to push it a long way. And it's going to be a real, real serious test for him. Hopefully Cilic is going to go out there and just take cracks at it and see what he can do. And it's going to be a heck of a lot of fun to watch.
So this brings us to what I think is the most interesting quarter remaining. At the top, we've got Raonic Zverev, and then underneath that, Dimitrov Federer. And I mean, I think that Dimitrov Federer is the marquee match of this round. I think it's going to be sensational. But let's talk about Raonic Zverev very quickly first. Zverev's been very German. He's just worked his way through every match comfortably, very methodically. I haven't seen anything that's I would consider inspiring. He's just really just taking care of business in a very clean fashion. Raonic has had a couple little stumbles along the way, but, you know, he's recovered his feet as he stumbled, and here he is. So if we look at Raonic's run through so far, he got through against Struff with two tiebreakers, a little tight there. Then Yuzny was four sets, which is a good win. But, I mean, look, we're not talking about Yuzny from 5-6 years ago, who was very dangerous. And then straight sets over Ramos Vinolas. But, again, you know, 7-6, 6-4, 7-5. That's a close match. That's not him putting down a stamp of authority. That's him kind of squeezing through, not shakily, but, you know, that's a very small edge there.
Yep. Ramos was playing very well, to be fair.
Sure.
I scouted him earlier in the tournament, and he kind of shocked me on the grass. Like, he played much, much better on the grass than I expected him to. I mean, he was hitting the ball big, big, big and flat. His movement was good. He had his feet underneath him. It was really surprising. So I'm not surprised to see that close one. I mean, we know Milos doesn't have the best surface return out there. And so,
Really?
Yeah. And so if you give him a lot of time, he can smack a forehand. There's no doubt about that.
But yeah, but that doesn't happen very often. So yeah.
So anyway, who do you have going through? That's really what I want to know.
Yeah, I see Zverev getting through this one. I think Raonic is like obviously a very talented player. He's doing very, very well. Zverev is mature enough. I think he can go out there, and his game is just more complete than Raonic's. As a whole, he's a better returner, he's a better mover, he's better off the ground, in a sense, slightly less dangerous, but better, and just a little more steady. So I think he's going to get through this match. I think it'll go 4, maybe even 5. There's going to be a lot of 7-5 and 7-6 sets in this match, I think. But I think Zverev is going to come through. He's just a little more complete and a little more steady.
So I'm gonna be do my best impression of Bernie Tomic here and be completely honest. I don't know. I have no expectation for who's gonna come through that. I don't know who to pick in this matchup. I would like to say that it should be Sasha Zverev because I'd like to say that he just has a more complete game and he should be able to hold serve all the time and he should be able to eventually make enough returns to either win the breakers or to sneak a couple of breaks against Milos. But my conflict with that is that I think Milos has the kind of aggression and power that can really bother Sasha. And I just don't know how that's going to pan out. What I expect and what I can say is that I expect someone is going to play poorly, not that they're going to have a bad day, but that one of those guys is going to make the other guy play really poorly. So either Milos is going to attack enough that Sasha is going to break down and it's going to look ugly, or Sasha is going to be able to counterpunch strong enough. And I use that term lightly because his counterpunching can look like attacking, where he's going to make Milos look bad because if Milos isn't able to assert himself on his service games, he's going to stop holding serve.
Yeah, I don't think anybody really. I think the only person that can make Milos look bad is Milos. But at the end of the day, yeah,
Roger.
And I understand what you're saying. Well, but even then, I think it just comes down to can you squeeze a break against him or not. And I think in this case, there, like I said, he's strong enough on his own serve that I think he'll hold against Milos' subpar return game. And then I think he just has that little bit of extra that he's the more likely one. And this is the thing, folks. Look, when you're predicting tennis matches, I mean, you're playing odds. I mean, it's not like you can say somebody's definitely going to win this match. We just look at the patterns and the matchups and say what's likely to happen. And I think if these guys play 100 sets, Zverev is going to get more breaks than Milos will over a course of 100 sets. Of course, they're only going to play best of five, but
yeah, that's,
at the end of the day, sure. I think that Zverev is more likely to get the break in any given set by, you know, a relatively small margin, but it's there. And by that measure, I think he's going to get through. But if we talk about Dimitrov Federer, I'm super excited for this one. Dimitrov's been playing lights out. You know, he's had a little, I mean, seller today, obviously, 6-1, 6-1, and then retired. Didn't recover well from his matchup with Isner. But before that, Dimitrov just wrecked Baghdatis, who was playing quite well and is a very dangerous player on the grass. It's a very penetrating ball, very athletic and creative and flashy, which I think grass tends to reward more than the other surfaces do.
And I don't think Baghdatis had recovered from his retirement in 45 degrees Celsius heat in Turkey a few days earlier, which is scary. I mean, I think he did a great job. I think he got through his first round.
Yeah, no, but he got through his first two rounds, I believe, quite comfortably. He beat Ward, or maybe it was only his first round, but he beat Ward in straights. Looked quite sharp there. I mean, the thing to me is, like, I didn't think that he looked bad out there. I think Dimitrov just really took care of business the way he's taken care of all these matches so far. And Fed is Fed. I mean, look, he kind of inched his way past Zverev today, but I mean, I think we expected the set scores are going to be relatively close in that one, but the match really wasn't going to be that close. You know, I really struggle to pick a winner in this match. As funny
Come
as it
on,
sounds.
Man.
No, I do. I do. And I know that sounds weird because I picked Fed to win the whole thing. And I did. I think Dimitrov is one of a very small number of players in the draw who can actually genuinely give Fed some trouble out there on the grass.
I'm going to be very clear about this. When it comes to picking Raonic versus Zverev, the reason that I can't make the choice is because I don't know the state of their minds, right? Like, I don't know how aggressive and how motivated. And I mean, we're talking about like the last 5% here. We're not talking about like, you know, do they care? Like, did they do a workout a month ago? For sure, both of the guys are prepared. But I don't know how they are today, tomorrow, Monday and Tuesday, whatever day that they're going to be on the schedule. I haven't looked at it yet. But when it comes to Dimitrov and Federer, Federer's playing lights out. He's regaining some of his aura. No, he's not overshadowing Rafa right now. But Dimitrov just in no way seems ready to take that limelight to me. And when it comes to the matchup, we know that it's going to be tight. We know that both guys are capable of beating the other guys. Both guys have wins over the other guy. But, I mean, I just don't see how this one is even tough for you. I mean,
it just is. I'm telling you.
Federer's got to be your favorite there.
I don't disagree with that. I just – look, as a Federer fan and as I picked Federer, like, this is a match that for Federer to take the whole tournament, I didn't want to see for him. I think this is a very dangerous match for him. I think there's probably only – the only match I think that is more dangerous for him right now is playing Nadal. And, I think he's going to come through, but I think it's going to be a very cagey affair. I think you're looking at four sets, maybe five. And, again, like I come back to what I said about not Murray. Which match did I say? Oh, Muller. I just wouldn't be shocked if there's an upset here. I know a lot of people would be amazed. I wouldn't be. I think this is a very dangerous match for Fed.
Look, here's the thing. It wouldn't shock me if Dimitrov wins one against Fed. What would shock me is if he actually upsets Fed and then goes on to win the tournament and then establishes himself as a top four, top five guy.
Yeah, that wouldn't shock me at this point. Like I said, I mean, I think it's a matter of time for him.
Right. He's I'm still just saying that out. I don't see it happening right now.
Right. Well, that's fair enough. I mean, look, the only thing that's going to stop him from being a top four, top five player, I think, in the next year or two is whether or not he figures out that he needs to start hitting over his bloody backhand return on the clay. And when he figures that out, then watch out, everybody. Until then, as long as he keeps chipping that thing on surfaces other than grass and fast hard court, on the return, he's going to have some troubles. He's going to lose some matches he probably shouldn't lose. And you know, we'll see what happens. But for this match, this is a very dangerous match.
Please make a mental note of that, because that's something that we've never talked about what that tells us about Dimitrov's psychology. And that's something that we should talk about, the fact that he does chip that backhand all the time on the
clay. But he does it on hard and grass too. I think that's a whole other conversation.
A whole other conversation.
But I think we should also note that Fed has done a lot of that and won a lot of majors while doing it. So,
that slice backhand is absolutely on another level than Dimitrov's.
Look, I'm not arguing that it's better, but I'm just saying that I don't know that that's a – well, look, we can get into that another time. I think whoever wins that match is going to come through this quarter and be in the semis. I'll say that. I think whoever wins this match is going to beat the winner of Raonic Zverev.
Okay.
I think if it's Fed, he will take care of Zverev fairly handily. I think if it's Dimitrov, it'll be closer, but I think he's still good for it.
Now, ironically, if Zverev gets through Milos, and if Dimitrov gets through Fed, then I think that Dimitrov should slice a lot of backhands. But
sure.
I'm not sure. I just don't see that happening. I mean, I think Fed's going to get through this one. If Dimitrov steps up, then it'll be a little surprising to me. I don't think Fed is threatened by Dimitrov at this point right now, but I think that he is wise enough to take him very seriously. And I think he's just confident in the fact that he's going to attack and that he basically can out Dimitrov.
You mean he can out Fed Dimitrov?
Well, no, because I don't know, because Dimitrov's not trying to be Fed.
But anyways.
I think he stopped that when he was like 21.
Maybe. So. I don't know. I actually would respectfully disagree on that, but fair enough. Let's move down to the last quarter then, which is kind of actually a little bit of a boring quarter, relatively speaking. You know, it's interesting to me when I think about kind of the quote-unquote big four who, you know, have been seeded top four here at this tournament. The two that I thought were most vulnerable were Murray and Djokovic, and they're the two that have come out with by far the easier draws. The draws have really fallen into place for both of them. I mean, Djokovic is now playing Mannarino in his next match after having played Gulbis, he's got Klizan, who retired after a set in two games. Then he plays Pavlasek. Which is,
which is a dream draw in any round of a slam.
And then Gulbis, after Gulbis has had a big win. So I think that's also a great time to play him. I think Gulbis can be dangerous. But, I mean, Gulbis after a big win.
He was dangerous. He took out Delpo when he was playing
exactly,
well.
But that's the thing is, I mean, well, hitting first serves as second serves and making a lot of them went a long way in that. But the thing to me is, look, I mean, I think Gulbis was playing well, and he was dangerous, and then he got his big win, and then he instantly became significantly less dangerous.
Yes.
The moment that he upset Del Potro, his chance of winning his next man-to-man match were just virtually nil, especially given who he was playing.
I mean, let's be fair. If Gulbis had beaten Del Potro and then had Mannarino in the next round, we probably would have picked Mannarino over Gulbis.
I don't know that I would have picked Mannarino over Gulbis, but almost anybody else in the draw I would have picked over Gulbis. to tell you just how well I think this draw has fallen into place for Djokovic, because here he is. He's got Mannarino next, who came over Monfils in five.
To be fair, well, first of all, I mean, you got to give credit to Mannarino for beating Monfils. That's a heck of a win.
No, absolutely.
I thought that Monfils was going to struggle with Edmund, and he played that really well. Maybe more importantly, though, Novak looks different. Okay. Mm-hmm. So a couple of things to note here, which I haven't told you yet, so you wouldn't know this, but in the locker room, he's eating different food. Mm-hmm. Of note there in the locker room, he's eating food.
Okay? Right. Well, there's that.
Because it's been a year since I've seen that. He looks like he's gained some weight. He looks healthier. He looks stronger. And for sure on the court, I mean, the one thing that everybody should be able to tell is he looks, what's the right term here? More locked in is what I want to say.
Yeah.
Like,
Well, I think
higher level
of
motivation, higher level of focus.
Right. Well, here's the thing. I'm like, if you're not eating enough food and you're starving your brain of calories, like being focused for a 5-set match is tough. And you know, this is the thing to me is I see all those things. Like, obviously, I haven't seen him in the locker room because I haven't been in the locker room. But I see the improvements, and I'm really happy to see those improvements. I still think that Djokovic is a solid year of hard work away from getting back to where he was. And I don't think he'll ever get back to where he really was before. But I don't think that if the draw hadn't been this friendly, I think he had no chance of winning this tournament. I think he actually has a crack at it now. I don't think he's going to win it simply because of the way the semifinals and finals are shaping up. I wasn't sure he was going to make the semis. I now think that he probably will and then lose there.
It's hard for me to see how he doesn't make the semifinals.
Well, that's exactly the thing to me. And I've been talking about this for several podcasts now, is if you make him play back-to-back tough matches or get back-to-back big wins, I think he's out. But he hasn't had to have a single big win yet. And here he is in the fourth round, Mannarino, and then he's going to play either Thiem or Berdych in the next round, which I'm sorry, but on grass, they're both good matchups for him. And he has expended very little energy to get to this point. And Mannarino just played a 5-set match against Monfils, so you know he worked his ass off for that one. And so I just look at this and I think the draw couldn't have been any nicer. And he's going to make the semis. He might even make it through to the finals. But I just don't think that he has it in him to beat two of the big four back-to-back at the moment. I think in another 3 or 4 months he'll be there. But I don't think he's there right now. But I guess the big question is, who's he going to play? Thiem or Berdych?
Well, the thing that's interesting is, I mean, we have to reach way back into the podcast archive for this, but I had said, you know, Djokovic could end up really, really struggling if he doesn't turn the ship around, and hopeful that he would turn the ship around. But even if he was really struggling, he's still a guy that's going to be ranked probably in the top 20. And he hasn't had to beat a top 20 guy so far, and he's in the fourth round. And Mannarino's never been a top 20 guy, and he's probably not going to be a top 20 guy anytime in the near future, unless he somehow manages to pull this up bet. But yeah, so I mean, Djokovic is looking at being into the quarters really without having to beat anyone really in the top 30 or 35, which is remarkable. I see Berdych getting through Thiem. The one thing that we haven't mentioned either here or just talking to each other is I think Berdych sees this as a big opportunity. I think he still senses weakness in Novak, at least as much as he has for the last 6 years or whatever it's been. I mean,
oh sure. I mean, look, I think there's still blood in the water when Novak's concerned. You know, and I think the other people feel like they can beat him.
Yeah, so I mean, Berdych hasn't had his best year by any means, and he's in here seated 11th. I think seeing Thiem as his seed in the fourth round is about as good as he can hope for. And knowing he's going to have to play one of the big four, I mean, he basically never beats Fed at this point in his career when it really matters. He's not going to like his chances against Rafa. Andy Murray has owned him at Wimbledon. I mean, Novak's his best shot. So if Berdych does as I expect and gets through Thiem, then heck, I mean, that's the best chance that someone's going to have to upset Novak. I mean, it's the only chance that.
Oh, well, yeah, really I was going to say, because I mean, after Mannarino, and after that, it's big four times. So,
yeah, and it might work against Novak the fact that he hasn't had any tough matches. I mean,
I think he needs that. And this, you know, I mean, like I said, I've been saying this for a while. I think the back-to-back tough ones are what gets him. But I mean, I think he's starting to fill the tank up a little bit. I think he's starting to get some reserves. Enough that I think he can come through somebody like Berdych and still win a semi. But I don't think he can beat a Berdych and then a Federer and then a Nadal. I don't see that happening for him.
That would be epic if he somehow manages to go beat Berdych, Fed, and beat Nadal in the final. It would be an epic win, and it would redefine how I think about him. It really would.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit more about the Thiem match real quick. The Thiem Berdych. You see Berdych coming through. Tell me why. Like, what do you think? What dynamic is going to play out in that match that's going to get him through?
Well, I mean, I hate to make it about something like this, but the truth is, I don't think that Thiem backs himself psychologically on the grass courts of Wimbledon or any other grass courts for that matter yet at this stage in his career. Mm. I think that fourth round at Wimbledon, if you had told him at the start of the tournament you're going to make it to the fourth round and you're going to lose to a big hitting guy, someone who's been top 10 for most of their career, I think he would have taken that. I think he would have accepted that and said, okay, that's a good result for me here. It's going to keep his ranking basically where it is. It underperforms his seed. You know,
but only slightly by one match, yeah.
Yeah, and I think he's fine with that because remember, I mean, this is a guy that after Rafa is dominating the clay court seasons. So, you know, he's basically not supposed to do well on the grass. In his mind, I mean, he still thinks like that. And obviously, you know, with Rafa and Fed being two of the best grass court players ever and two of the best clay court players ever, that it doesn't have to be that way. But that, to me, still is where a team is. And in my mind, it's really self-imposed. I mean, physically speaking, he's got just an enormous motor psychologically. I mean, the guy just is an absolute workhorse. I mean, he hits great off of both sides. He serves well enough. But I think the way he goes about point construction, you know, he likes to play long points. He doesn't play enough short points. He doesn't spread the court enough. He doesn't have a comfort level with moving forward, even though he does finish forward if it's like an easy volley.
Yeah, I mean, he's beating people down rather than just like knocking them over.
Yeah, it's just not a good matchup. And I think that... Yeah. It counts a lot on hitting over people, getting the ball out of their strike zone, getting it up and spinning through them. And first of all, it's hard to do that against Berdych. And then it's hard to do that on grass. And then it's going to be very hard to do that against Berdych on grass when he's, you know, smells blood in the water. And
but it's just playing quite well. Yeah, I mean, I think the comment that you made to me about that you said about the serve is really, I think, the point of differentiation in this match. I just don't think the TM serves well enough. And when you add in all the other pieces about where his aggression level is once the rally gets started, then I think Berdych is going to win a lot of comfortable service games and make Tim fight for his. And that's just a bad situation for anybody to be in. And at the end of the day, that's going to be the telling point. I think you're probably looking at four sets, but I think Berdych is going to come through with this just because of the weapons and the surface and the mentality. I don't really feel comfortable. You know, you kind of chickened out a little bit calling the earlier match with Raonic and Zverev, and I think I'm going to do the same.
Not chickening out. I'm just saying, literally, I know what I think it comes down to, and I don't know the answer to it. So it just
I get you. I'm teasing. But so you know, I kind of feel a little bit the same way about a Berdych Djokovic. A lot of it's just going to come down to how Berdych plays on the day, which is always a little bit of.
It's always the case for. Yeah.
Well, I know so, but I mean, I really think in this case, like if you took me back, you know, 18 months and said these guys are playing grass at Wimbledon, I said, well, Djokovic is going to win that match. And there's no hesitation because it almost doesn't matter in a sense how well Berdych plays. But now I think it does matter. I think if Berdych comes out and serves well and has a good day, he's going to beat Djokovic. It'll probably be in four sets, but I think it's going to happen. But I think if he comes out and plays not really well, then Djokovic is going to inch him out and get through. So, yeah. That puts us through the semis. Here. Yeah.
One, first, if Berdych is somehow able to get through and beat Djokovic, to me, it's really Djokovic beating himself. Because I think the matchup from a strictly tactical standpoint is great for Novak. Novak does not mind when you hit the ball at him hard and flat and you don't spread the court. This does not bother him that much. And that's how Berdych plays. The second point is when it comes to the TM and Berdych match, if we imaginarily fast forward to the US Open at the end of August, if this matchup happens again in the fourth round, I would probably pick it the other way.
Right.
Because I think TM's going to take a lot of confidence from making it this far at Wimbledon, as ironic as that is for a number 8 seed. But I really think he's still at that stage in his development as a player, which speaks to his real potential, that he's going to take that kind of confidence. And when he gets to a hard court, he will be more comfortable and think, okay, not I'm supposed to be Berdych, but just I'm going to beat this guy. just that he's not going to lose to him. And so to me, it's a really interesting moment in time where we can say, hey, Berdych's probably going to get through this guy on grass. But this might be the last time.
I think it might be the last time. Yeah, that if he beats TM in this match, it might be the last time that he ever beats him. Last chance to do so. But yeah, well, that kind of wraps us up, brings us through to the semifinals, where it looks like we both feel it's going to be a Djokovic Fed in the bottom half and Nadal Murray on the top half, which who knew? I didn't think that the big four would all make it, because I felt like either Murray or Djokovic was going to blink before they got there. But honestly, the draws... Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have been shocked if they both blinked, but I thought at least one of them would. But the draws have just come out so nicely for those two. And Fed and Nadal just look so good. I can't really see anybody beating them. You know, I think Fed's going to come through against Dimitrov. I do. I just think it is a dangerous... Well, I do. I mean, like, I really do. I just think it's... What I really wanted to show is I just think it is a very dangerous match for him, in a way where I feel like I said, I think the only player that's more dangerous for Fed on the grass right now is Nadal. And I don't think that's by a big margin. I think it's the only, like, right now in this tournament, in this moment, I feel I'd back Fed more comfortably against anybody else in the tournament except Nadal than Dimitrov in this match. I don't know. I just feel like it's going to be a really tough one, a cagey affair. We'll see what happens. But, you know, as always, folks, would love to hear your thoughts. You can reach me at Glenn with one N, G-L-E-N, at tacticaltennis.com.
And I'm Jacob at tacticaltennis.com.
Oh, and his English internet, because he is at Wimbledon right now.
Did London just cut me out there?
Yeah, no, it didn't cut you out. You just got a little bit fuzzy. Jacob at tacticaltennis.com. And you can reach either of us by email. Please share your thoughts. Go by the website, tacotennis.com, and subscribe if you haven't already. As I mentioned in the last podcast, we are giving some stuff away in the coming weeks. Plural, it's not going to happen tomorrow, but it is happening, and you don't want to miss out, because it's going to be, hopefully, I think, quite nice. And that's about it, folks. Have a good one.
Peace out, guys.